Welcome to all of you. Happy International Women's Day week, I suppose, if I can say that. And thank you very much for choosing this particular forum today, because there's so many this week, obviously. But thank you very much for joining us. And I'm very grateful that you chose women in the CEO community. And topic today, we do many of these forums, but the topic today is on glass staircase and a challenging path on the climb to glass ceiling. Just a little bit of housekeeping. I always ask you to participate, if possible, on these forums as much as you can, either by just voicing your questions, your opinions, but also you have the chat facility for those who have it enabled. And you're more than welcome to put your questions on there, and I'll just filter them through if that's okay. But also, please, can you put yourself on mute whilst we have our introduction and presentation, so we don't have any background noises for the beginning, please. Thank you very, very much. So for those of you who do not know yet what Armstrong-Wolf does or offer, we are a global chief operating officer advisory firm, but very clearly on this call, you'll have so many more people who are not yet or are not a chief operating officer, but you are all very, very welcome. It's a broad church of people, and this is what we like. The reason why we like it is because the conversations that we have at all levels of seniority make the world go round. And therefore, everyone needs to be involved in conversations such as this. So our purpose is to support the chief operating officers and their business managers and partners in investment banking and asset management. Indeed, if you are just outside of that, also, you are very welcome indeed. We address market-wide non-proprietary challenges leading to improved efficiencies, conduct, culture, diversity, and leadership. And our mission is to professionalize the role of the chief operating officer and business management through accreditation. So enhancing the ability of the CEO community to attract the best talent to be embedded and to be in an embedded and recognized role in the C-suite across financial services. And above all, we are on a mission to drive D&I programs, to drive positive workplace culture, and highlight all the opportunities offered to women and all talents in our industry. I am joined today by three fantastic female leaders. You'll notice there was, we advertised someone else, but that someone else is unfortunately unwell, and we had an amazing person stepping in, and this is Nimu Manjesi, who is Global Markets Diversity Advocate at Citi. And I also would like to welcome Norma Gillespie, who is the CEO of Resource Solutions, and Rowena Everson, the Managing Director and Head of Digital Channels and Data Analytics at Standard Chartered. So thank you very much. What a wonderful trio. May I introduce you? Well, I've introduced yourselves, but please, could you say a few words about yourselves, please, starting with Norma?
Hi, everyone. My name is Norma Gillespie, and I run the Resource Solutions consultancy business, which is made up of our talent consultancy business, where we have key practitioners on data and market intelligence and ED&I, and also our other two businesses, which are focused on recruitment, RPO, and managed service providers as well. So focus really today is from the data from our market intelligence business, the consultancy. So hopefully some interesting topics for you to discuss later.
Thank you. Rowena, please.
Nice to see so many people, 99 participants. We just need one more to make it 100. I like the neatness around that. So as Gwen said, I head up digital and data for Standard Chartered. I'm based in London. The bulk of my work is client facing. So we look at either bespoke solutions for very large clients, which are digital or data enabled using artificial intelligence, machine learning, new and emerging technologies like APIs and blockchain. And previously, though, I have also, I think when I first engaged with Armstrong-Wolf, I was actually working as a COO for Standard Chartered. I was based in London. And then I was in Poland as the CEO. So I've moved around quite a lot. And it's nice to see an interesting group of people. I quickly scanned down who the participants are, and a number of different organizations and individuals there. So really hoping we're going to get lots of lively comments on this topic.
Thanks, Marina. We can tell you are in data. You're looking at the numbers. So, and Nimi, please.
Hi, everyone. Really great to be here. And we got to that even 100, you called it, Rowena. And I am Global Markets Diversity Advocate, really leading our culture, diversity and inclusion efforts for our markets business across our more than 70-odd dealing floors. Also really, really passionate in this place, and really as we build out our program, very much making sure that it is a data-led and a bottoms-up program that we put in place in front of our people. And so creating opportunities for awareness, opportunities for growth, coaching, mentoring, information sharing is really what we try to do, but making sure that it is bespoke in every single piece of how we go about it. And so really, really great to be here.
Thank you. Well, today we are discussing why 2023 is the perfect storm for women in finance, where the blend of microeconomic, social and geopolitical factors surrounding the global pandemic has resulted in the rolling back of much of the progress met towards gender parity in our industry. We are going to start with a few slides from Resource Solutions, from Norma, but we'll obviously allow for plenty of time for discussions. And again, please put your questions on the chat or voice them if you have them. This is really your platform, your forum, so please get anything you want out of this. We'll have three topics. The one is on ageism and is age hindering progression. The second will focus on what leadership development strategies actually exist above a certain level. And the third is about L&D and reskilling and career mobility. So without further ado, I'll give you the microphone now, Norma, and I'll leave you to present. So we'll have next slide, I think, is the next one to get through. Right.
Thank you, Rowena, and apologies. This is my second area of the day for this topic. So there are lots of statistics to go through here. So I hope there's some areas of interest here for you. But I first thought we'd start with, you hear about the glass ceiling quite significantly across the industries. But before you get to the glass ceiling, I think what we really believe is an equally fragile piece there around ensuring representation is on the staircase as well, in every area of the staircase as you get to that ceiling, especially in financial services. I wanted to dive more generically across industries and also looking at the Standard & Poor's 500 to start with, etc., before we dive into finance, just so you've got a wider representation. So as you can see, there's some powerful headlines out there at the minute. So just in terms of, by any measure, there are women absolutely smashing through the glass ceiling. The rate at which they're doing so, I suppose, by any measures, you can see is accelerating as well. Of course, this is fabulous news, and the headlines, do show that the progress is starting. But I think what does fall behind there are some more challenging problems which we need to address and which we really need to identify across the industry. So headlines showed in January 2023, for the first time ever, the S&P 500 had 50 female CEOs in seat. What we do at Resource Solutions is we actually track all females across all of the listings. So the FTSE fell behind with just 9 out of 100 in the FTSE 100. So other countries, we also track their indexes such as the DAX, the Hang Seng, the Japan Nikkei 225, but they don't have the same level of representation. But if we look a little bit back at history, there are 50 female CEOs on the Fortune 500 today, but you'll have to search very hard to find how many CEOs they've had actually since inception in 1972. So the intelligence and how we track shows has actually been 107 since 1972, which almost means that half of that total number of women appointed to CEO has been in the last 50 years that are in the position now. So the earlier years for the Fortune 500, what they actually saw was two or three women in that CEO seat. And generally, between the two to three to the four at the top end, outstanding women, they were actually the same people that were moving through the S&P 500 as well. 2001 was the turning point, which saw the numbers start to steadily increase, but it's had some dips along the way. So I think it's really important to have a look at how these women were appointed, first of all. So if we could move to the next slide. So what can we learn from these individuals and how they've achieved their position? So in the early years to 2000, the majority of female CEOs were also owner proprietors of companies. So without distracting from the fact that, you know, they've had formidable business acumen and success in the roles they've been in, this is very different in terms of scenario planning to actually being selected to be put into that position. The way that we categorise the S&P 500 is into five different types, and that's how we look across all of our industries when we're identifying. So first of all, joined as CEO. So this is individuals who were hired directly into that post. Fast track women, so they were hired into the organization at C-suite level and promoted CEO within 5 years. Steady progress, so women joining at director level and promoted within the first 5 to 15 years. Then career arc, which are women who are actually joining at more junior management level and promoted within that 15 to 25 year mark. And then lifers. So these are the women that have spent the majority or all of their career at the organization, which is 25 years or more. So, you know, they've been there, they've worn the t-shirt for every role they've been within that organization. So they've always been those who've joined directly as CEO, and on average, a third of all CEO appointments are done in this way. Just under a quarter make steady progress. So they join an organization and rise to CEO over the period of 15 to 15 years. The career arcs accounts for a fifth of female CEOs, and they take longer to get there, between 15 to 25 years. And typically they start off within the organization at a more junior position. And then you've got the lifers. So they join the business the first day of their job and they work up through their entire career. And then finally, we have the fast track. So they've joined a company at a senior level, usually C-suite, and then they've progressed to CEO within 5 years. Previously, this category was non-existent before 2006, but it's been steadily growing and last year represented almost a quarter of all CEOs in this seat. It's in this category that we actually start to see the benefits of the quotas and weighted application processes, because you start to see that multiplier effect. So this is where women lift up other women, bring them up the elevator and actively promote those other female talent. So the other trend we're also beginning to see is the established CEO talent as well, that's also female. So we've recently seen examples of female CEOs moving from one Fortune 500 company to another. And there's also a growing number of CEOs coming from and going to companies outside the Fortune 500 as well. This can only be a good thing, because we know with this, on average, especially if you look at the US, female leaders promote 3x3 more women to senior roles than other organizations or other individuals within that set. So it's really worthwhile looking at an analysis across your own organizations and how you could support that talent map for future talent and the progress of women through your institutions using similar levels of categorization. So we've covered the how. So let's now look at the age and tenure, just to see this how this overall influences the overall picture of the S&P 500. So the graph suggests in recent years, the time taken has reduced on average. However, the overall average time remains at around 15 years, where it has been for the last 20 years. And this is a really important consideration for those in mid-career around the 10-year mark looking to become CEO, because you really need to establish at that point where your next move is. Have a look at the pathway. Where are you? How do you get onto that pathway? Is the organisation you're in supporting you on that pathway as well? And what are your other options if the company isn't able to do that? And interestingly, the average age of women appointed CEO has been trending upwards as well over the last 30 years. In the late 1980s, it was around 45, and now it's actually at the age of 56. So this is partly due to the increase in the number of female CEOs and the variety of career pathways they take. However, still to this day, there remain too few, few female CEOs to actually read too much into this shift, but it's one at Resource Solutions that we are continuing to track. Although it also does point to the fact that for some, biding your time is a strategy. It's also in contrast to some of the real challenges that women face with ageism. After all, how can you be finished at 50, as we hear, if other organisations are hiring dynamic CEOs at the age of 56? So it'll be really interesting to see where this trend goes over the next few years. Naturally, it can't go up indefinitely. So in order to generate tomorrow's female leaders, there needs to be a sufficient talent pipeline for the rest of the organisation. And when we analyse the organisational pyramid, we definitely see a varied picture here. So leaving the US for a minute and taking a wider view, I just want to point towards research conducted by McKinsey that shows the average distribution of female representation at each level of the business. At no level do women have parity in representation, and typically the highest levels of representation exist at a lower, more junior level. Their proportion gradually reduces even more at the senior levels as they rise through the ranks. In this broader view, McKinsey found that it took on average 24 years for a woman to become CEO. And this was 20% longer than for men, and that they found that female CEOs were likely to be hired internally, with 63% being hired in that facet. It was also interesting to note that they found that by far the majority of senior roles held by women below CEO were those that did not hold a P&L. And thus their relative power within the organisation was limited. And I really do think this is a key point around the P&L ownership that's one to take away from today. So we've looked more broadly now. So what I really want to focus on now is what you've all come here for, financial services. So from what we've seen from the McKinsey data, it's very similar to female representation and what we're seeing within financial services as well. So a view from Deloitte provides a closer look. And as you can see, in general, it shows lower representation of women in financial services overall at each category, from management, senior leadership, right the way through to the C-suite. So typically, 5% of CEOs in the finance industry are female. Here too, they lag behind other industries in terms of that same representation. So looking at the graph, it clearly shows a similar pattern in North America, Europe and APAC. Both Europe and APAC lag behind North America too, with the exception of Europe at a senior leadership level. Looking at the data though, the regional level does hide some variation in individual countries. Whilst it's not surprising that the US returns the best representation figures for North America, Canada and Mexico don't significantly have large enough finance sectors to really move that dial. France leads the way in Europe ahead of the Netherlands, the UK and Germany. Interestingly, both France and the Netherlands have legislated quota systems for female representation for organisations of a given size that are also linked to near-term targets. In APAC, Singapore has shown the region the way forward. Indeed, it outperforms both the US and France at the more junior leadership levels and is on track to reach parity by 2030. The Singaporean government has made diversity and the focus on female employment a priority. Hong Kong and China have recently introduced initiatives to increase representation in their finance industries and look set to improve significantly over the next 5 years. Japan and India, in contrast, are way behind. More widely, Australia, South Africa and Brazil perform well in terms of female representation in France. Nigeria is one at Resource Solutions we're watching really closely too. 8 out of Nigeria's 23 banks are led by women, 35%. Here and in many other areas, Nigeria is undergoing something of a transformation that will see it rise rapidly on the world scene in the next decade. Something, as I said, that our market intelligence teams and our clients are watching really closely. In terms of financial services, the numbers are lagging. 21% at senior director, 19% at C-suite, and 5% at CEO. Whilst all this progress is great and there is movement, the future definitely needs to be looked at cautiously. There's still a lot more to do. So let's dive into what's happening within financial services. And really what we want to focus on here is internal moves and how we can broaden that view. So over the last 5 years, we've seen a definite increase in the proportion of financial services hires that have been made internally. Much of this was in reaction to the pandemic, as well as the global skills shortage, which we're all aware of. If you add in inflation, a realignment of global supply chains too, each of these has a really key part to play. Last year, we saw a slight dip, but the percentage is historically still high. So when we look more closely through the data for financial hires in FS from 2022, we see quite a different pattern. The proportion of internal hires are much lower, particularly at the more senior level. This is either good or bad, depending on what stage you're at in your workforce planning, I would say. So the positive aspects are that it shows there's a real market for senior female talent. The talent pool is larger and more available than it's been, and women are taking advantage of opportunities and driving their own career development. The opposite view would be that within financial services organizations, they are failing to develop and internally promote women to the same extent as they are men. Additionally, due to that lack of training and coaching, financial services organizations are not able to identify the female talent they already have, which what we can see from our data and our intelligence is leading to them then being identified and approached by outside specialists. So from our perspective at Resource Solutions, when we're advising clients on techniques in this space, we ask them to look at, first of all, their HR operating model. Because in the first instance, what we are seeing is a real view in terms of the new world of work. Does your operating model have the experience to be able to look at your total talent plan? Look at your baseline. And, you know, Rowena talked earlier about the technology. This is absolutely critical when you're looking at your own talent as well. Do you have the operating model in place? Do you have the technology to be able to identify the really good talent you've already got in the business? And how do you approach that total talent workforce? The sunrise roles that are coming through, the sunset roles as well. How do you skill, reskill? And invest in your workforce. Some of the more forward-looking organisations that we're working on, working with at the minute are really focusing on that, first of all, the technology at the front end, but also looking at different operating methods from an HR perspective, internal headhunting, keeping those roles open for longer so you've got more focus within your internal internal talent pool. Focusing, if you have outsourcing providers there, in terms of an internal first approach. Also, I think there's some gaps there in terms of especially contingent hiring as well. There's a real gap between actually bringing contingent female hires into the workforce and that and actually converting them to permanent hires as well. At the event I was at this morning, one of the things that I did talk about was 25% of women on LinkedIn, when they do a search, their first search is for fully remote work. And I just think that's something to bear in mind as you start to look at your own workforces as well. How many of these women in your organization could be doing that search already? Anyway, I could continue in this space all day, but I'll move on for the sake of time. So let me now look at some of the other barriers that are hindering the progression of women. And whilst much has been done to challenge old-fashioned notions about women in senior positions, much more still needs to be done to tackle the notions about older people in the workforce as well. Ageism is a real issue that affects both men and women, although unfortunately women are often more adversely affected, and women of colour even more so. So the fact is that all societies are ageing, demographic shifts are accelerating in most countries, and it's particularly noticeable in advanced post-industrial countries such as Japan, Germany, South Korea, and to the lesser extent in the UK, US, and some others. But for our conversation, it simply means that over the next few years, the proportion of people in the 55 to 64 age group will grow versus those in that younger year gap of 16 to 25. So of course, about half of these individuals will be women. In fact, the UK by 2024, there will be twice as many women in the 55 to 64 age group as there will in the 16 to 24 age group. Society at large and companies and organisations are going to need to take a look at how they actively create opportunities to engage these individuals with the world of work and to keep them economically alive and active. In almost every country on which there is data, people in the older age groups are discriminated against. And those that are discriminated against are mostly women, in particular, as I said, women of colour. There are many statistics that speak to the disparity in challenges older women face. They're 30% more likely to be unable to work because they're caring for others. In almost every economy, they earn less than men, and this is even more pronounced in the 55 to 64 age group. Additionally, women are less likely to have sufficient funds for their retirement, and health-wise too, women are more likely to suffer various medical conditions in their last working decade than men. So this really does need a call to action. I think, you know, one of the key things here to look at is the policies for caring for aged, for parents. Could this be a consideration when you're actually looking at your current workforce at the minute? So let's look at finance in a bit more detail and how ageism is also a problem. So you can see here a study by Oliver Wyman. 85% of women in financial services reported that they had experienced ageism. And this was the highest reported score by sector and considerably above the overall sector average of 53%. In applying for jobs in finance, 64% of women reported ageism in the initial application process, 63% in the final hiring decision, and only 36% reported in the job or role-related assessment part of the application. So this further supports what we all know, that ageism is a product of bias rather than empirical or practical facts. So we also know that the experience of ageism starts earlier for women as well. So this is typically seen at women as they start into their 40s. So with an ageing population being actively turned away or overlooked, and less women being promoted up the junior ranks, there is a real risk to the most important talent pool, and that is our next generation of leaders. So as you can see, the graph illustrates, in addition to age, we know that for every 100 men promoted for entry-level roles to manager-level roles, there are 87 women and 82 women of colour. At first glance, this difference looks quite small, but as you scale up, it quickly amounts to a significant difference in the numbers in each group at the manager level. We could flick to the next slide. So with an aging population being actively turned away or overlooked, and less women being promoted up the junior ranks, there's a real risk to that talent pool and the next generation of leaders. So we know that the multiplier effect, as I mentioned earlier, is incredibly important. Women promote between 2 and 5 times as many women to senior positions as men do, but they can only do this if they have sufficient women to promote. So with the average age of female CEOs being 55, it's crucial that there are sufficient women at the senior management director level over the next 10 years. So what do we do to support? So address age bias and recruit age positively. So this is really focusing on your age neutral content in adverts and also the language in terms of how you speak to your candidates. Eradicate that age bias in corporate culture. So this really needs you to relook at the contribution model and what older workers can actually offer to the workforce. Inclusive training, avoiding that stereotypical bias. Remote, hybrid, I think I mentioned that great stat earlier about 25% of remote work is looked at, which is really important to keep in mind here. Career development doesn't need to stop at 40. So ensuring you've got the appropriate opportunities for workers of all ages, you're able to diversify that career development plan to ensure that it's relevant for all as well. So how do these combined challenges and obstacles manifest in the finance industry? Well, if we can show next the CTI report that between 41 and 48% of women lead their finance roles before they attain a senior leadership position. Typically, this is between the ages of 30 and 40. At this point, they're likely to have been in the role for around about 10 years or so. So women are twice as likely as men to lead financial services at this point. This is a global phenomenon too. Multiple studies have found similar impacts across all the markets where financial services are that major component. So on the next slide, I just want to show you what a critical key career path is within financial services. So it's quite astounding when you actually take this slide at face value. So if you're to join a financial institution from university in your 20s, you take on an entry-level role. As with all organisations, the majority of employees, around 60%, are at this level. Financial institutions typically have 15% attrition at this stage. They tend to leave and very few come back at that stage. The average tenure for women in financial services is 4.7 years. This average falls in the junior management level, which also coincides with the age at which most women on average have their children. This is no coincidence, of course. About 9 to 10% of organizations are made up of senior managers or director. Typically, women reach this level in their late 20s to mid 30s, and this is also where the attrition is the highest. So as we've said, up to 48% of women have left by this stage. So what does that mean in terms of probability? It's quite a stark picture. So as we've seen, I think if we can move to the next slide, as we've spoken about the numbers leaving, it then becomes a statistical exercise to look at the probability of finding a woman in a given role in a financial services organisation. So the discrepancies are really clear to see at every level, and the impact of almost half leaving by director level is clear, with an employee picked at random more than 3 times more likely to be a man. So I'd now like to just focus very quickly, and I'm conscious of time, on how women perceive success in financial services. So we do quite a lot of our voice of the customer within Resource Solutions, and we also then quantify that with other research as well. So we've actually showed you the McKinsey review here, which absolutely fell in line with the Resource Solutions one. So the survey shows here is quite an interesting view in terms of the differences between what junior employees starting their financial careers feel and what they feel is important versus what senior individuals feel as well. So junior women in financial institutions see strong communication skills, being an effective team player and delivering top results as being the key to corporate success. But amongst those who have actually achieved the success and reached the level of the C-suite, whilst they agree on the need to deliver results, they place much more emphasis on leadership skills and sponsorship from a senior leader. I listened to a podcast the other day, actually, by Carla Harris, who's has a senior C-suite position within Morgan Stanley. And it was really interesting. You know, some of her key call outs were, no one makes it alone. You need someone in there who's pounding the table on your behalf. But not only that sponsor, one of the key things, and she joined the business as an analyst. And she said one of the key things was she didn't only just have a sponsor. She also made sure if the sponsor lost their nerve, that there was an influencer behind the sponsor as well. So I thought there were some really key call outs there. So in terms of when you then factor the challenges women face in the industry and the fact that we lose so many women along the journey, surely there's more that we need to do. So we do need to continue to try to see this growth and number of women in those, not only junior, but right the way through to those senior positions in finance. So where do we start? So I think some of the key points here is to understand your data, external and internal. Use market intelligence to understand the pool of female finance talent you've got within and with outside the industry as well. Understand how the challenges I've mentioned are affecting the women in your organization as well. How many are you losing? Does your organization look like our typical BFSI? Talk to women in your organization and those who've left as well. So understand their assumptions and belief and reasons, and then challenge your own organizational assumptions as well. I think it's really critical so that where we see the most success in this areas, that it's done on an ongoing basis as well. And finally, I think some of the key things are that we've done with our clients as well is audit your processes. We just moved to final slide. Yes, thank you. So auditing your processes, your recruitment, your hiring, your training, your succession planning. You know, what have you actually got in place in terms of your sponsorship, your coaching, your development? Do they work for the women in your organization? Are they actually working against the women in your organization? Thank you, Gwen.
Thank you. Well, that's a lot of data to digest. I love the no one makes it alone bit. I think I'll keep that. I think coin that one as well. I will just go straight into, conscious of time, to Rowena and Nimu on a couple of things. I just wanted to get their, first and foremost, their initial reactions on this, on the data that we've just heard. Rowena.
Yes, thank you. So, I mean, I had a sneak peek at some of these slides previously, and I was horrified by some of the data in there, but also, you know, it substantiates a lot of the things that we expected were there. I think the one that stood out for me particularly also is this topic around ageism. And I took it away and I did a bit of digging myself, and I you know, there's a lot of reports that are written that are very data-based, as you mentioned. I do love my data. And you know, that means that from a factual database point of view, this really exists. And My thoughts are really that there's an incorrect correlation of age to energy, ambition, and enthusiasm. I think that's an assumption that is made. And I actually found myself, so I'm recruiting for a role at the moment, if you see it on LinkedIn, if you know anybody in who's based in Frankfurt and wants an exciting job, I'm recruiting. So I've been looking at a lot of CVs recently, and I came across one. And I looked at the data the person had put when they graduated on from university. And of course, a graduation date gives you a rough estimate of somebody's age. And I sort of monitored my own reaction to this, because the person was actually, in my head, I suddenly realized I had actually aged the future candidate. I hadn't got a gender for the candidate, but in my head, I'd kind of imagined that this person would be a particular age because I was looking for a particular experience level. And I realized that this CV actually was for somebody who was older and actually had a much longer experience track. And I realized that I myself was having that bias in terms of having a presupposition, not necessarily negatively or positively, but I had made a presupposition around the age of the candidate. So actually, I think the first thing is, it's assumptions and it's incorrect. And I think it ties to, because I then challenged myself as to why was I having this reaction? What was it? And I thought, well, I'm making assumptions around energy and ambition and enthusiasm, as I said. And I think when we had the conversation with Ron the other day, we also talked about, is there an assumption around malleability and having a fixed mindset as people get older? And these are sort of things that we can certainly address as individuals. A lot of the people on this call are senior women and are most likely to be not in their 20s, although there will be some people who are at the sort of younger end of their career path. But demonstrating that you have a growth mindset, demonstrating that sort of energy, ambition. One of the things I often talk about when people ask me about career pathing and things like that, and I do quite a bit of mentoring, is remember to ask for things that you want. Make a statement. Don't assume that people automatically know that you have ambition. Don't necessarily sit around and wait for things to happen. Patience can be a virtue, but it can also be a really bad thing if you're trying to actively manage your career, as Norma talked about. So I think on the ageism, I think we've got to challenge assumptions around age, and I think we can do a lot of that ourselves. The data points that were also quite frightening were those points around how many people get deselected before they even get an opportunity for an interview. And that was because I saw these slides previously when I was doing my CV reviews the other day, that really triggered in me thinking that's something that I'm going to choose to not do. I'm actively going to be aware of that and actually make sure that I'm judging a CV based on skills, not with this sort of unconscious bias around ageism. But we need every manager who is hiring to also do that, for that to be successful and for that to no longer be a feature.
Thank you. Nimu, your reaction on ageism and unconscious bias, please.
Look, I thought the data was incredibly interesting, shocking, to be honest, also in a lot of ways, in the sense that as you look through the data, I think we're getting to a point where we're talking about gender, we're talking about race and ethnicity, we're talking about disability, we're talking about various pillars of diversity. But age is one of those areas I still think there's a bit of a discomfort in terms of going into digging into a little bit more, you know, what's behind it. And given that it affects so many of us, and we know that diverse talent tends to feel whatever is underlying issues a lot more than any other demographic, you know, I think it's in some respects maybe not even surprising that we can see this deterioration show up in the data. I was also quite surprised by how early the disconnect happens. There's that great slide in terms of what, you know, junior talent and established talent believe is important in terms of for career. And so if you're thinking about a scenario where someone is starting quite early in their career and building with a set of tools and the ones that, you know, were highlighted in that study is, you know, if you're thinking teamwork, delivering top results, and communication is what you need to be building, but ultimately what you actually need to succeed is that senior leadership, sponsorship. You do need to for sure deliver results, and you do need to have that communication. You're already structurally behind way before you get to that 50 that we all talk around. And so, you know, just how early that happens was quite interesting for me as it relates to the data. I also think, I speak to a lot of people who are first generation in a lot of what they do. And so that, I guess, lack of understanding or not really even having the ability to have a sense of what a typical career looks like, again, just widens that gap. Is one, maybe the tools that you're building early on are extending your probability of success, and what a typical path looks like is not always that transparent, and therefore you're really, you know, building in a no man's land, so to speak. And so by the time that you're getting to that age debate, you're already so far behind. And so it's about doing that work in terms of bridging that gap and making sure that there is higher probabilities for success. And I think this data is incredibly powerful in terms of trying to bridge that gap.
Thank you. I'll stay with you for a moment. I know in your introduction, you talked about coaching and mentoring, and this is what you're also very much focusing on. So the data that we were just showing, Norma, in fact, are you still there? Are you still with us, Norma?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
Yes.
So the data was showing that there's a real difference in what junior women think will give them a successful career to what senior women who have successful career believe are the enablers to help them to get there. So I just wanted to ask you, Nimu, how do we then enable young women and support young women with understanding and learning the keys to success?
Look, the good thing about this is that I think young women and diverse talent in general already understand and are very hungry to get this coaching and mentorship. So, you know, we've definitely got willing populations that will value this. I think what we can do better is be a lot more intentional, is when those connections are built up, is really empower the mentors in terms of these are the things that will really, really drive success for talent, and this is where the focus needs to be. I think we tend to provide guidance more generally, and I just think in us being a little bit more focused in that debate and a little bit more structured in what we deliver with the support of the mentors and I would say even the sponsors and the coaches, I think that we can have a higher probability of success. There's that graphic and I guess that anecdote about, you know, putting up your ladder against the wrong building, the wrong window. And it's that type of thought process, is are we actually putting these structures in place and setting up people for the right window, the right, you know, the right building? That's ultimately what we need to do. And so with a willing audience and the right type of guidance in terms of what actually drives success, I think we can actually start to narrow the gap.
Thank you. And quickly on sponsorship, I know Norma or Rowena, there's a question around how do you set up yourself about seeking sponsors? And we do lots of sessions around sponsorship versus mentorship, but your immediate reactions around how do you seek sponsorship internally?
I think from my side, I think you need to start really early in terms of the sponsors. I think you, as soon as you're in a role, you need to get a cheerleader really quickly. And that might be a manager. It might be a skip manager potentially. But I think you've got to find, you know, as I said, it really resonated what Carla Harris said. You've got to find that person really, really quickly. I feel sponsorship is the key over mentorship. I think sponsorship is absolutely the key, because you've got to have someone who's gonna back you through the organization at every level. And it's, you know, I think the stats are they're quite terrifying, aren't they, in some instances. And you know, you're sort of saying to you know, I have twins, they're two minutes apart, and I'm basically saying to my daughter, you have to make this within the first 10 years of coming out of university, whereas my son, yeah, you know, you're okay, you'll probably be promoted as well. There's some other great stats as well from the World Economic Forum as well. You know, within that parenthood group, men are 23% more likely to be promoted, whereas that drops to women is just over 12% within that parenthood period as well. So it's a real sprint in those first 10 years at the minute. So we've got to make that change. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I think my camera's gone off, I'm being told. So apologies.
As long as you stay here, I've got a couple of questions for you still. And Rowena, your reaction on sponsorship.
Yes, so I mean, I would 100% agree that having sponsors within the organisation is far more important probably than actually really being the most excellent at your job in your particular technical skill set. I mean, I have to say, I assume that, you know, people who are being successful in their career have got aptitude and capabilities, but having a cheerleader is definitely the most important. I would just deviate slightly or add slightly to what Norma said there, which is, you know, getting a sponsor early on, yes, that is very important. But as you go through your career, I mean, I can look back and say who my sponsors have been. And over, you know, time, sometimes they leave the organization. Sometimes they retire early. Sometimes they, you know, find themselves that they've put a foot wrong and they end up not being with the organization. So you actually have to keep refreshing that. It's a little bit like, you know, your network. You have to keep investing in new sponsors and broadening that network, because people move on. People do different things. Things stop being, you know, the same priority to individuals. At a different point in time because of other things that are going on in their lives. You know, we are more than our jobs, although our jobs are very important. But you can't assume that that's always going to be there. So I think you need a sponsor, but you actually need to continue to refresh that sponsor list and finding new sponsors.
Be part of a network as well that supports you. A question for you, Norma, actually, that I wanted to raise from Marie, if Marie's still here. We have a question here around one of the additional thing I actively seek out is the title cliffs by which we lose diverse people, typically a 2VP level and SVP level. Are there any thoughts from any of you panelists on addressing the funding, training, and pipelining differently as an industry?
Sorry, Gwen, was that for me?
Yeah, I'll start with you, Shari. I think you have probably more most of the answers.
Yes, absolutely. So I think in terms of that funnel, it's really, really important in terms of why they're dropping off. And I think, you know, it's to be able to address why they're dropping off at what level. And I think there's some really key things there in terms of women more generally and what they need. Because I think one of the things that we're actually looking at the minute, which is one, maybe one for another day, is the tipping point at where we're starting to see that women are being put into distress roles as well, which doesn't particularly set them up for success. So for me, it's about having clearer workforce plans within financial services, clear succession planning, and also clear and structured HR business partnering. I think that's really fundamental. The HR business partner has got to change in terms of the day-to-day. And that is really looking, as we talked about before, is what does that leadership look like? I was in another forum actually, and IBM talked about how their C-suite actually have leadership, female leadership forums. And they basically do like the old brown bag sessions, and they look at a C-suite level, who those women are that are coming through, and identify those potential women. And they're put on a fast track program, and they're basically nurtured through that program, whether it's what they need from a personal perspective, the hours they need to work, what they can bring to the company. But they know that being part of that cohort, that, you know, they've got the backing behind them, both from a personal perspective, but also from a work perspective as well. So I think it all stems back to having your planning, identification of your talent. You know, God, when I first entered financial services in the talent space, we used to do early careers, and we used to actually identify who we thought would be the CEO in those early careers sessions. So, you know, I'm not sure if that happens anymore now, but I think it's about that strategic planning. It's about having the input at an earlier stage in terms of what's going to make that, what is going to help that individual in terms of through their career. And there's a big piece as well, sorry, and I will finish, a big piece around aged parents as well, because what you start to see is when you do hit that C-suite, women tend to start to then move from their children to their parents. So there's got to be that, you know, consultative and that care piece as well. I heard a great stat today that two-thirds of women in the Netherlands are part-time workers, which I thought was fantastic. You know, they work with another individual, and that's such advancement in terms of, I think, where we are in many other economies.
That's right. And also the cost of childcare is also, right, referring to the comment from Phil here, which is, rightly so, saying childcare costs are a major issues these days too. In the UK, these now cost over 15k annually, which is over 75% of average take-home pay. Ever more women find it financially challenging to come back into work, especially if you don't have indeed that setup at home where you can actually just give, share the load indeed. So childcare costs is indeed a huge factor, and probably is in the US as well and all over the world. Finally, I just wanted to have a quick question around to you, the three of you, about how do women get to the top if it is indeed the aspiration? So what does that strategy look like? This is more around that topic around career mobility and opportunities. I'll start with you, Nemu.
It's going to sound a little bit cheesy, but I sort of resonates in terms of the thoughts around, you know, the twins and having a different story. But it's being very clear up front, very early in your career, that this is an aspiration, because the journey is a long journey, and therefore the way you approach it is going to need to be very, very intentional. And so it's really about wanting to go do it. But that doesn't, you know, that only tells us aspiration, but as you think around then the skills, it's about making sure then that you're putting yourself in situations where you are in strategy conversations, you are in the room and you're understanding how to interact with those C-suite positions and stakeholders. It's very much also still, and in those rooms and in the way that you're approaching it, it's very much that back to basics. It's about understanding, how do you make money? How do you access resources? How do you, you know, really move the machine that is that business world? I think in our space, it's also about understanding the various different industries that are within our remit. So what is happening in investments? What's happening in financial services? What does commercial banking really think around? What is that evaluation a framework really all about? And I think you can't deny it, especially if you're wanting to be relevant in our industry, is emerging markets, is building that emerging market expertise. There is such a richness in understanding the complexity that comes in operating in emerging markets that can definitely pivot careers. During the financial crisis, there were studies being done about just labor movements. And during the crisis, they actually found that people who had worked in emerging markets were able to navigate the financial crisis a lot better. And so building that aside from, you know, these being areas of significant growth, but it's also about building that skill for yourselves. And so I'd say that is that journey to the top. I cannot stress it enough, is that sponsorship piece is important, and we speak now more than just that sponsorship. It's about building that board of directors for yourself. And so really, like what Rowena had to say, is that you have to think about this as a very fluid moment. And so at each stage of your career, what does that board of directors look like, and making sure that you've got those stakeholders in place. And you know, the rest is you're capable.
I could spend so much more time talking to you, but I know we've been summoned to stop. Rowena, final last words?
I'll be very quick. I'll pick up on the word intentional from Nimu there. I was going to say, you know, decide what you want and go for it, which is another thing I tend to say quite a lot. And I would say that's, to date, that's been my career path. You know, what is it that I want to do next and make it happen. Now, sometimes those things don't work out. And that brings me on to my second point. So decide what you want and make it happen. Just go for it and decide what needs to be in place to do it. Manage your career. But sometimes it still doesn't happen. So the other thing is, and I don't fish, but I'm going to use a fishing analogy, which is, you know, cast more than one rod and one line into the river at a time. Often be pursuing two or three different paths. Maybe one is your main path, but don't be so single track focused that actually you don't have a couple of other sort of, you know, hooks in the river at the same time, because you might find something quite interesting. So that's what I'll add.
I like that. Let me know when you catch that big fish, Marina. And then Norma, last words, please, before I let you leave you all.
Just to reiterate, you know, what Nima and Marina said, and for me, it's, I think, be your authentic self and play with the best. Go with the best company out there that leads in an authentic way, and you feel that they are going to move in terms of their market. You've got choice. Just get into the best one you can.
Thank you very much. Well, it's been brilliant. Thank you ever so much. I think we could do another session. Probably will be doing another session very soon. Really thank you. Thank my panelists and Norma for their input. Thank all of you as well for, again, choosing us as your International Women's Day Week session. Thank you ever so much. And indeed, no one makes it alone. You are not alone. This is your community. Come back. Thank you so much. We see you soon.
Bye. Thank you. Bye. Bye-bye.